The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Expecting minus $143 billion. Wow, it comes in much, much smaller. Minus $87 billion. And now this follows a $163 that gets converted to $162 billion with a minus sign, the worst since record-keeping 1989. Then we cut it in half to 87.6. 87.6 would be the lightest, and I have to really go back. 87.6 would be the lightest since, wow, September of 23, SEP of 23. And this really does underscore how the movement of goods and services has really changed due to a variety of tariff-related issues.
So there's good economic news this morning because we have ABC News. U.S. inflation gauge cools with little sign of tariff impact. So that's one headline from ABC News. There are other inflation numbers as inflation down, the rate slipping 2.1% in April, lower than expected. And then the Fed's preferred gauge, that's from the Fed's preferred gauge showing that. We've got new CPI numbers, personal income increasing. And that was, they're saying, almost triple the expectations, 0.8% for April. And so income numbers looking good as well as the trade deficit narrows. It was largest monthly decline, I believe, in the trade deficit. Now, the White House released a statement saying that it's the largest monthly decline in the trade deficit on record. So some individuals, even CNBC, saying, wow, that was one of the headlines. I know CNBC's Rick Santelli, as he talked about that, and his comment was, wow, this is a great start. So with that, we have Dr. Michael Bustler, our guru on all things financial, Stockton University professor. Happy Friday, TGIF. Hey, Michael.
And happy Friday to you, Dawn. Thanks for having me. As you know, it's always my pleasure to be here.
Oh, well, it's our pleasure to have you here. So what do you see when you look out and you see, and these are the latest economic numbers. I was reading from both some national headlines as well as the government numbers. And then the White House just now released a press release, you know, touting the numbers. So I'd like the good, the bad, the ugly with Dr. Michael Bustler.
All right. So let's start off with the good. The good is it's working. Trump's policies are working. Remember, the goal was to reduce and eventually eliminate this negative balance of trade, which last year was close to $1 trillion and was pointing in that direction this year. So he's been able to do that. He's cut the negative number in half this last month. Now, people said, well, wait a minute. If you put all these tariffs on, you're right, it'll cut down on how much people buy from foreign countries, but it's going to drive prices way up. So we're very fearful of inflation. The Federal Reserve did not lower interest rates at their last meeting, although I believe they should have, mostly because they believe that the tariffs were going to lead to higher inflation. Well, Trump got into office measuring inflation by the Consumer Price Index and a number of other gauges, some of which you mentioned. But the Consumer Price Index was 2.9% over a 12-month period. It's now down to 2.3%. The Fed uses something called the Personal Consumption Expenditure, which is a little different than the Consumer Price Index. But that's down to 2.1%. The Fed's goal is to get the inflation down to 2%. We're just about there. So Trump's policies are working. Personal income went up 0.8% in 1 month, last month. Usually the gains are in the 0.3%, 0.4% range. So people are making more money. Prices are not going up as fast. That means the increase in income that you're getting is a real increase because it's greater than inflation, and that's going to improve people's standard of living. I would say, and Trump should simply stay the course in spite of everybody trying to fight him in whatever court they can find to fight him. In spite of that, he's still been able to work on these countries. Now, he'd hoped to have some more trade deals in place by now. Mm-hmm. We only have one, and that was with England. But that'll be a model for all of them. What was involved there? There was agreed to have a 10% reciprocal tariff. So we'll charge 10% on their goods. They'll charge 10% on our goods. What makes these deals a little hard to negotiate is there's some exceptions. For instance, the U.S. said there are certain products vital to our national security, steel, aluminum, copper, medical supplies. So Trump said, I'm going to keep a 25% tariff on those goods. So it'll then encourage manufacturing in the U.S. But everything else, 10% tariff reciprocal. They charge and we charge. That's the model going forward. Now, let me say one other thing. We're having a little trouble with the European Union. Mm-hmm. So Trump said on April 2nd, I'll give you 90 days to for everybody to negotiate new deals. 45, 50 days go by, European Union didn't do anything. So Trump says, well, if we don't have a deal in a week, I'm going to put 50% tariffs on. Well, all of a sudden, European Union starts negotiating, and they're right now at the negotiating table. The reason the European Union is so difficult is there's 27 countries. Everybody can agree on a 10% reciprocal tariff. What they can't agree on is what the exceptions from that tariff will be. And each country has different products that they want to protect. So it's going to take a while to get there. We're moving in the right direction. And you asked me the good, the bad, and the ugly. Mm-hmm. One thing that has me a little nervous is consumer spending only went up 2%, 0.2% last month. If you multiply that by 12, that's a 2.4% annual gain, and that's a little less than we would like to see. So that number has me a little nervous. Part of the reason is people bought so much the prior month because they thought these tariffs were going into effect, and that may have had some negative impact on the consumer spending number this month. But overall, this is good, very little bad.
Yeah, and I saw that, you know, to your point about the Fed chair, Powell, he did meet with President Trump at the White House yesterday. And I know that President Trump, you know, has called on Powell and the Fed to cut interest rates because of the central banks, you know, the inflation concerns, all of that. But they did meet at the White House. This was, this was the first time since yep. Trump's inaugural, obviously, in January. So that, I guess that's a good sign. But the president invited Chair Powell to come to the White House, discuss economic developments, growth, employment, inflation. I know that the Fed chair did release a statement about it, and said that he's not going to promise anything. But I see that the markets, I'm looking, you know, they're up. The numbers look good. What about this word as far as the deficit? Because a lot of lawmakers, and now we know the Big Beautiful Bill Act goes to the Senate. A lot of lawmakers, Senator Rand Paul, for example, Democrats and Republicans have said, you know, we cannot pass this thing, and with you know, it's too big and it grows the deficit too much. And then we heard Scott Bessent come out and try to explain how their other factors are going to, you know, narrow this deficit. And so this is key, right, to convince lawmakers to even vote for the thing.
So what happened was the Congressional Budget Office, in theory, a nonpartisan group that's supposed to give objective assessments when Congress passes legislation. Their assessment is what will the economic impact of the legislation be. They are notoriously wrong. Over the years, practically every forecast that they've given is wrong. This last one is very wrong. They said if you pass this bill, the deficit's going to increase, I think it was over $3 trillion over the next 10 years. That's wrong. Why? So the big, beautiful bill will make the Trump tax cuts permanent and also have a few other tax cuts for people who collect, who get income from their tips, Social Security, and overtime. So the CBO said that you put that tax cut into effect, and that alone will cause an increase in the deficit. Now, why is that wrong? Take a look at every tax cut. In 2017, we passed the 2018 tax cuts. Total tax revenue increased in 2018 over 2017, increased 2019 over 2018. So putting in those tax cuts will not cause total revenue to go down. Now people say, well, why is that? You're taxing at a lower rate. And that's true. But at the lower tax rates, it encourages more economic activity and more growth. And more growth leads to more income that's being taxed and more tax revenue being collected, even though the tax rate has gone down. The Congressional Budget Office is forecasting economic growth to be only 1.7% after these tax cuts. That's probably about half, maybe even less, than what the actual growth will be. So the tax cuts will not decrease tax revenue and therefore will not add to the deficit. At the same time, they're cutting, the House bill passed, said they're cutting $1.5 trillion over a 10-year period from spending. Mm-hmm. So the big, beautiful bill will not add to the deficit. And all these lawmakers saying, well, we have to cut more. And frankly, I think we should cut more. But politically, I don't think you can cut any more at this time. So if you get something passed where the tax rates go down and yet tax revenue goes up and you're able to hold the line on spending somewhat, that will tend to reduce the deficit, not increase it. My last column in Newsmax, I pointed this out, that CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, is wrong. This will not add to the deficit.
And so on this one, there are a lot of numbers, to these economic indicators to go through. Inflation, the CPI, sure. You talked about that, the 0.2% increase. That's even though it's up, it's a little disappointing. You're saying payroll employment increasing by 177,000, average hourly earnings 0.06% in April, U.S. import price index 0.1%. I mean, there are like so many numbers. The fixed investment, they're saying the highest since Q2 of 23 at 7.8%, consumer spending slowing to 1.8%. That was the number you highlighted because you said, because it's the first quarter. Trump had tried to mitigate that too, because he had said, well, I didn't get sworn in until January 20th. You know, I kind of chuckle at him. You know, he's like, hey, you got to sell it. And the GDP, U.S. economy contracting 0.3%.
Exactly.
So you're concerned about that one, but you said it's because you think people are trying to mitigate what they thought would be this whole tariff situation.
Yeah. Right now, the Federal Reserve should cut interest rates. Inflation has come down since the beginning of the year. We just talked about how it's come down. The economy has been slowing. For most of last year, the economy grew at a 3% rate. In the fourth quarter, it slowed to 2.4%. In the first quarter of this year, it turned slightly negative. The Federal Reserve is supposed to stay ahead of these things. They should start cutting interest rates. I've talked on the show before. I think Jerome Powell, with all due respect to everybody, but I think Jerome Powell has been the worst Fed chairman since Arthur Burns back in the 70s. He let inflation get out of hand all through 21 and half of 22 before he did anything, and that's much of the reason why we have the problem now. To avoid making another mistake, I think the Fed should start cutting interest rates at their next meeting. They should have cut it at their last meeting. Mm-hmm. That will help to stimulate the economy, and there's no fear of inflation. Every number we just talked about shows that the inflation rate is coming down, and it's almost to where the Federal Reserve's target is. Last September, the inflation rate was higher than this, and the Fed started cutting interest rates. I think they started doing it a little too soon back then, but now it's time to cut interest rates, and I hope the Fed does it at their next meeting. I don't think they will, but I think they should at their next meeting.
Now, Powell was, he was a Trump appointee back in 2017.
Yes.
If you think he's the worst, who do you think was the best? I'm just curious.
Alan Greenspan, I thought, did a great job when he was in there, and he was in there during a tough time, too, but he did very well. Ben Bernanke, I thought, did a fairly good job. Arthur Burns in the 70s did nothing while the inflation rate kept going up for a decade, and most will agree that he was probably the worst. Jerome Powell has made a number of mistakes. Just quickly, he got into office in 2018. Trump appointed him. For no reason, he raised interest rates four times. 2019, he realized he made a mistake, so he cut them again. Then in 2021 and into 2022, inflation is going high. He says, oh, don't worry about it. It's only transitory. It'll go away by itself. Another mistake. Then he finally started raising interest rates in June of 2022. He raised them up until July of 2023. He should have raised them a couple more times, and we'd have gotten rid of the inflation rate. Yet he stopped. And then I mentioned at the end of last year, there was no reason to cut interest rates. Inflation in September had gotten down to 2.4%, close to his target. He started cutting interest rates too soon. Inflation jumped up to 2.9% in January of this year. So Powell has a history of making bad decisions that have cost the economy. So he doesn't make another bad decision. I think he should start cutting interest rates at the next meeting.
So in this case, I mean, Powell, his term is set to expire next year. So
correct.
Who would you recommend for Trump to, who would you recommend next? Trump has expressed his dismay with Powell, wishes that he could say what he used to say on his famous show, The Apprentice, you're fired. But, they've advised against that. But who would
I'm not sure legally if he can,
I mean, we would nominate Dr. Michael Bussler. But, I'm just curious, because you watch this stuff like sports, you obviously track it and breathe it, live and breathe it. Who would you recommend?
So there are 12 presidents of the 12 Federal Reserve banks and the Federal Reserve districts around the country. There are two of three of them that would be very, very good choices. Now, the president of the New York Fed, I think, is about to retire. He would probably be a good choice. Austin Goolsbee might be a choice, too. Now, he's a Democrat. But yet he has views that are somewhat consistent with President Trump. So he'll look at the current members of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve. And as I say, there are 12. There are a couple of other prominent economists. There are two out at Stanford, Cochran and Taylor, who may be a good choice also. So, but there are plenty of good choices. The one we have in there. Look, President Trump has done a lot of things right. He made a couple of bad choices. Jerome Powell, I think, was not a good choice. Christopher Wray at the FBI was not a good choice. And he sort of learned from these mistakes. Now, the people he put in now all have views very consistent with him everywhere in his cabinet. And you're seeing a lot of progress being made in reducing government spending, not as fast as we'd like it, because of mostly political pressures, but all of the cabinet members are on board with the logic. We have to get this government spending down. There's a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse. Let's get it all down, and let's get government spending in line so we can reduce the deficit, eventually balance the budget, and then start to work on reducing the public debt.
And so with this, what do you make of the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent? I mean, he would have to leave that post, obviously, but is there precedent for a president choosing his own person who's an outsider to that job? I'm assuming that he's not going to keep Powell. He's said horrible things about him.
I think he's definitely not keeping Powell.
Yeah.
Bessent, I think, would be a good choice, but he's doing such a great job in the Treasury that I don't think you want to try to replace him with with somebody else. He's negotiating very good deals, and he's a very good negotiator, as Trump is a very, very good negotiator. And he also tells you things exactly the way it is, not like a normal politician who kind of spins everything. Bessent will tell you, this is what's happening, this is good. The negotiations, he said the other day, with China are starting to drag a little bit. It may be time for the top people, Xi and China and Trump and from the U.S., to get together to try to negotiate. So I'd like to see Trump put somebody good in the Federal Reserve. I wouldn't necessarily like him to take somebody that may make his cabinet a little weaker.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, Dr. Michael Bussler, I could listen to you all day. Your students are so lucky at Stockton University. I always say my nephew, Lukey, I call him Lukey, Luke Monachetti, is raves about you as well as all your students. And we can find you on national news as well. You work so hard. So thank you so much for sharing your insights.
Thank you, Dawn. Thanks for having me, and thanks for the kind words. I look forward to doing it again.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.